Okay, everyone, welcome. We are live streaming on YouTube as well as ready to go on Zoom. I've got it about, my clock just turned to 7 o'clock. I don't really have any announcements other than, you know, this is class 4 of 5. So we have this Monday and next Monday, for the spiritual teacher. And then we will start back up again in August. So we'll take a break on the 26th of July and then start back up again on Monday, August 2nd for death and rebirth. And those are, all 5 Mondays in August. So the 2nd through the 30th. So I'll go ahead and turn it over to Robbie at this point.
Okay. Thank you, Linda. I'd just like to remind people that the teachings with Don Hendrick continue on Thursday evenings. So you might want to check in on those and see what you think. And then when does Venerable Robina start, Linda?
Yeah, so Venerable Robina starts the Wednesdays of August. So
okay.
She's with us August 4th, 11th, 18th, and 25th.
Okay, and that'll be on Zoom also.
Mm-hmm.
And as some people know, we have opened the center up on Sunday mornings. We now to watch Geshe Galik's teachings on screen. He's staying at home, but we are having people come into the center. We had a nice group this past Sunday morning, and we'll be there again this coming Sunday. So you're certainly invited to join us there, if you're so inclined, but the teachings will still be available on Zoom on Sunday mornings if you prefer to stay at home. So as Linda said, this is our fourth of 5 classes, continuing with the relationship with the spiritual teacher. We'll go from 7 to 8 o'clock tonight. So let's start with our prayers. If you can bring those up, Linda. I will read those, and if you can read along at home, but put yourself on mute. Yeah. So I'll read Refuge in Bodhicitta 3 times, 4 immeasurables, and then the short mandala offering, all in English. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends or hatred for enemies. This ground, anointed with perfume, strewn with flowers, adorned with Mount Meru, 4 continents, the sun and the moon. I imagine this as a Buddha field and offer it. May all living beings enjoy this pure land. Idam Guru Ratna Mandala Kamnirya Tayami. So now we'll begin with our meditation. I think we're becoming familiar with this. So begin by establishing your posture. Sit a little bit straighter on your chair, or if you're on a cushion, on your cushion, then you usually sit, not rigid, but it's said to be somewhat of a regal posture that we assume when we're meditating. Our back is a little bit straighter than we normally sit. We're not leaning back in the chair. but sitting a little bit away from the back. Our head is just a couple degrees in front of the vertical. Our eyes are either lightly closed or just slightly open, enough to let in a little bit of light but not really visualize things. Our jaw is lightly closed, not clenched. Our tongue is on the ridge of the gum above our upper teeth, touching the gum up there. Our shoulders are down, a little bit back, so our chest opens up. Our upper arms are away from our torso, and our right hand is on left, with thumbs touching, representing the union of wisdom and compassion that is enlightenment. If we're sitting in a chair, our feet are flat on the floor. It's fine to put a cushion under your feet if you need one. If we're sitting on a cushion, we're to the front third of the cushion to open our hips up a little bit, and our legs are crossed in a position that we find comfortable. So take a moment, scan your posture starting from the top of your head, working down. Identify any sources of tension or discomfort and address those now so that they don't become a distraction during the meditation. The idea is that once we establish the posture, it maintains itself, so it's not a source of distraction. It's something that we don't have to continually pay attention to once we get it so that it's comfortable and appropriate for us. This will be a little bit different for everybody. We're not trying to meet some platonic ideal of what a meditator looks like. And we begin by taking three deep breaths from the abdomen, the stomach expanding on the in-breath, contracting towards the spine on the out-breath. So do that just three times. And now we allow our breathing to return to its normal pattern. And following on the prayers, we take a moment to set our motivation for the meditation to follow. And as much as possible, we generate the bodhicitta motivation, the great mind motivation, the mind that thinks everything I do is so that I can become enlightened for the benefit of others. So it's really two parts of that, the wish to become enlightened for the benefit of others. That's the bodhicitta motivation, and that may not seem natural to us, may seem a little awkward, but even just the think along that line gives great power to the meditation that's to follow. I am doing this meditation to become enlightened for the benefit of others. And having set our motivation, we now begin the meditation, the simple concentration meditation, which we've become familiar with. Simple, but not necessarily easy. Sometimes the simple things can be very difficult. We place our mind, our awareness, on the physical sensation of breath moving out, in and out through the openings of our nose, the nostrils. Just the physical, tactile sensation. Direct perception of that. Nothing more, nothing less. We're not visualizing it. We're not describing it. We're not even going to count it. Just direct perception of consciousness on the breath, so that we can almost say, so we can say that they almost become one, that they are of the same nature, that the consciousness and the object it perceives, the movement of the breath, arise from the same karmic seeds. And whenever our mind wanders off, as it inevitably will, we just gently come back to the breath. Not judging, not harsh, but just come back to the breath over and over and over again. And that's the meditation we'll be doing for the next 9 or 10 minutes. Thank you. And we can end our meditation with a dedication. We begin with a motivation. We end with a dedication, so it has a definite beginning and end. And we think that we've done something a little bit out of the ordinary, made some effort for the past 10 minutes, and that has made a positive imprint on our mind stream. And we think, may that positive energy not be lost, but may it ripen in the future in a way that benefits all living beings. And you can relax your concentration. Let me get myself organized here. Okay. Did we have any questions come in from last week, Linda?
I have not received any.
Okay.
If anyone does have questions, of course, you can put it in the chat. And that's true if you're streaming live on YouTube as well. I'm on the right chat. So
okay.
Feel free to leave questions.
Okay. So just to review a little bit the material that we're covering, my aim in this module is really to give a very practical and kind of down-to-earth talk about the relationship with the spiritual teacher, because this is a topic that can become extremely mystified or difficult or confusing for people. So I've been trying to give a very practical and down-to-earth approach, and I hope people are finding that helpful, because this is a, like I said, a topic that can carry a lot of baggage or be a source of real confusion for people. So the first week we started about the different types of teachers that we may come across as we study Buddhism, just from a strictly academic teacher setting to a Dharma instructor, a meditation instructor, on through up spiritual guides whom we take our various levels of vows, the lay vows, the bodhisattva vows, refuge vows, bodhisattva vows, on up to tantric vows, culminating in what we call, sometimes referred to as the guru yoga type relationship. And we'll talk about that some next week, the highest level of relationship between student and teacher that typically comes about when one's doing tantric meditation practices. There's a whole module at the end of Discovering Buddhism on Tantra, and the student-teacher or student-guru relationship is key, is the core of those practices. So we'll talk about that a little bit next week, the practice of what is known as guru yoga, which is practiced at the highest level. And there's no requirement as a student of Buddhism that you have a teacher at any particular level. It's what's appropriate for you and your level of study and your level of interest and your connection with various teachers. You'll, if you study Buddhism for a while, you'll have relationships with multiple teachers, and each relationship will be different, as each relationship that teacher has with his or her students will be different. There's no template that it's all going to fit into. So we talked about that in the first class. Then we talked about the qualities that we would want to look for in someone who we may consider as a spiritual teacher. And I just wanted to go through those again, because I think I messed up the presentation a little bit the first time and left one out. This is one of the wonderful lists that we have lots of in Tibetan Buddhism. This is one of the lists of seven qualities that we would look for in a teacher. The first is ethical discipline. That means they live a life in which they do not harm others, primarily. Ethics is basically, to simplify it, is not harming others. So we look for a teacher who practices ethics in their life. We look for a teacher who has some ability, has developed their abilities of concentration, okay, that can stay focused and concentrated. We look for a teacher who has pacified their disturbing emotions, the emotions of greed, anger, ignorance. Look for those to have been pacified to some degree. We look for a teacher to have enthusiasm and great joy in teaching, someone who enjoys teaching. We look for a teacher who has more knowledge than we do. Okay. We look for a teacher who teaches, who is motivated by compassion and loving kindness, who wants to help his or her students. And we look for a teacher who's not a hypocrite, who doesn't claim to have insights or powers or abilities that they don't really have. Okay. Now, not every teacher is going to have all of these qualities. Okay, we certainly, but we want someone who has more positive, because I said we want a teacher who has more good qualities than negative qualities. So we can certainly have a teacher who has some, in what seem to be individual character flaws, but if their positive qualities outweigh them, they would be suitable as a teacher, possibly. So the most, it said the most important of these are the ethical discipline and the wish to help others and having more knowledge than we do. Of those seven, those three are the ones we should, are the most important to have, even if they're weak in the others. And then I also mentioned that another standard is we can look at the teacher's students, not expecting them to be perfect, understanding that they're human beings just like we are, but are, do they seem to be benefiting in positive ways from their association with this teacher? Are they moving in a positive direction in their study of Buddhism? So those are the qualities we look for in a teacher. And then there are qualities that we as students would hope to bring to the relationship with the teacher. And there are, again, seven of these in this list. And again, we all are not going to bring all these qualities to our relationship, but at least we'll have some and we can work on developing those that we don't have. The first is open-mindedness, which doesn't mean that we're just completely passive and accept anything we hear, but we are not clinging to our preconceptions and our opinions. We're open to hearing other ways of seeing things. So an open-minded attitude, common sense, our natural ability to distinguish between what is right and wrong, what doesn't sit right correctly with our inner core, that little voice, that inner voice that may tell us this is off, this doesn't sound right to me. That's a quality that we should acknowledge. We should come in with some, on our own side, some sense of ethics. What is right? What is wrong? What hurts people? What doesn't hurt people? What helps people? Third, we should, if we're coming to Buddhist teachings, we should have an interest in the Dharma, the teachings of the Buddha. And fourthly, we should have some respect for the Dharma and for the teachings. It doesn't mean we have to worship them or see them as gods, but we should have some basic respect from anyone who we're going to get teachings from. We should have an attentive mind, an ability to pay attention. May not be perfect. Hold on just a second. I've got someone here in the house doing some work. I need to speak to them.
So don't forget that if you have any questions, you can put that in the chat, whether you're here on Zoom or with us on YouTube. And if there's any like logistical questions, I can maybe answer those right now. Does anyone have a problem getting access to the information or anything like that?
So Linda, this is Janet. I have a question.
Sure.
So for each of the modules, I've been registering separately.
Uh-huh.
And I thought perhaps if I went back to the very first one, I could use that link. Mm-hmm. But it didn't work tonight. I tried going back. So do I need to register for each module?
To my knowledge, you shouldn't have to, but if it doesn't work, then yes.
That's because what it told me you were in another meeting is what it told me.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. But I'll do that. I'll just register for each. But thank you for answering that.
Yeah, supposedly you don't have to.
Okay, I'm back. I apologize. That will be the last interruption. Yeah, I had someone doing some work here in the house, and I was afraid that was going to happen. So an attentive mind, that was number five. Number six, some emotional maturity and stability. Doesn't mean we have to have it all together. Lots of times we come to the teachings because we don't have it all together. But at least be stable enough to hear the teachings and analyze them. And we very well may go through times of great emotional or mental distress where we can't hear the teachings, and we have to acknowledge that. I mean, we may want to continue coming to them, but we need to understand that sometimes our mind is not in a state where it can hear the teachings. And last one is, again, ethical responsibility, a wish to help others. Okay, so that's very similar to number two, actually. Number two is more ability to tell what's right and wrong, and number seven is really a personal sense of ethics, wanting to act in an ethical manner. So those are the ideal qualities of a student. We may have some of them, we may have all of them, but those are what we can aspire to as students, what we bring to the table from our half, from our side. And so, you know, it's said in some of the texts that we should take as long as 12 years to examine someone before we accept them as a teacher. Now, that's not realistic in most situations, and it doesn't mean you can't come to Kadampa Center until you've watched Geshe Gelug for 12 years to see what his qualities are. That's applying more really to the tantric levels. But even there, very few people would take 12 years to enter into a student-teacher relationship. But the point is, this is bring your discernment. Don't be in a rush. Don't feel like you have to get this kind of teacher or that kind of teacher or anything like that. Take your time and bring your native qualities of discernment to the process, and don't feel like there's any obligation to enter into any kind of relationship that doesn't feel appropriate to you. Okay, any questions about what I've said so far? Okay. Now we're going on to the next list, which is the benefits that we can get from a student-teacher relationship above and beyond just simple facts that we might get in an academic relationship. And this is a very traditional list in Tibetan Buddhism, and it's the way some of them phrased is a little bit difficult. Apply to our life, but I did want to go through this list. And this is a list of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. So this is a list of 8. We've had 2 lists of 7. This is a list of 8. Okay. The first is phrased as, we will build up positive force. And this refers to what's frequently called to the accumulation of merit, which refers to positive imprints on our mind stream that create positive effects in the future. This all ties in with karma. But if we enter into a relationship with someone who is a valid teacher, and we listen to his or her teachings sincerely, and we understand them, and we study them, and we put them into practice in our lives, we're creating positive imprints on our mind stream, saying that this relationship, a healthy student-teacher relationship, creates positive energy in our mind. Okay, that's one of the benefits. We become a better person in some ways. Okay, and that's what all of these points are. A healthy student-teacher relationship based on the qualities of the teacher and the student creates positive imprints, creates merit that will create the causes for good things to happen in the future. So that's not too hard to imagine. We can understand that. I think we can all think back to teachers we've had, either in Buddhism or non-Buddhist studies, where our interaction, our relationship with that teacher has definitely made us a better person. Okay, that's what we're saying here, that we become a better person from a healthy relationship. Now, if it's an unhealthy relationship, if it's not based on a desire, wish to learn, if the teacher is not an appropriate teacher, this benefit will certainly not accrue. An unhealthy student-teacher relationship, and we hear many tales of this in Buddhism and in other religions, does not make people happier, does not cause good things to happen. That's the inevitable, or not the inevitable, but the frequent result of an unhealthy student-teacher relationship. So this is one way we can look at our relationships with our teachers and say, is this making me a better person? Am I creating merit? If that's so, it must be to some degree a healthy relationship. Okay. The second benefit is phrased as we will please the Buddhas, referring to the Buddhas in the plural. This is based on the assumption that there have been countless beings throughout countless eons, not just the historical Buddha that we're familiar with, but countless others who have achieved the state of enlightenment, of Buddhahood, of complete wisdom and compassion. So there are countless Buddhas. And it's said that if we, by studying, by putting the teachings into practice, by developing our mind, it makes the Buddhas happy. Now, maybe we don't accept that. Maybe that's not our reality, okay? But it said it makes our teacher happy, our teacher in this lifetime, okay? It said that the greatest gift we can give to our teacher is to put their teachings into practice. You know, we can make material offerings if we're so inclined. We can say prayers for them. We can introduce them to wonderful things. We can cook them great food. I said the greatest gift we can give to our teacher of this lifetime, our teacher right now, is to put their teachings into practice. That creates great happiness for them. So we know, even if we don't accept the idea of countless Buddhas, just the teacher here, a valid teacher, that's what makes them happy, when their students put their teachings into practice, when they can see that their teachings have had a positive effect on their students. Okay? The third one is phrased, and this is, again, very traditional phrasing. We won't be disturbed by demons or bad company. For demons here, we're really talking about negative mind states, anger, covetousness, ignorance, by which I mean not understanding of reality, okay? As we develop in our relationship with our teacher, and as we begin to understand what they're telling us and putting it into practice, those negative mind states become less bothersome. Of course, for most of us, they're not disappearing completely, but we do have tools that the teacher has given us to deal with those negative mind states, those demons, if you want to use that word, when they arise, which they inevitably will. Okay? So we won't be, it says we won't be disturbed by demons or bad company. We can say we won't be as disturbed. We're probably still going to be disturbed, but we feel a little bit more capable of dealing with the bad times when they do arise because of the benefit, the teachings that we have received. It's like the teachers are giving us tools to put into our tool chest. And when we notice that anger is starting to rise, we can really, we have developed some concentration awareness. We can say, oh, that's anger. It's there. Lama Zopa Rinpoche has given me this tool to work with when anger arises. I want to get to some state where anger never arises, but I'm not there yet. But at least I have these tools to deal with these negative mind states when they arise. We call them negative because they cause us to suffer. They disturb our mind. They upset our mind. That's why we refer to them as negative mind states. Okay. The next one is phrased as, we will automatically put a stop to all disturbing emotions and misdeeds. Again, that's the ideal state. Most of us are not anywhere close to that, but it's working like this. And this is really, being aware, it's connected to the previous one. It's being aware of what's going on in our mind so that when we notice a negative mind arise, say anger arises, we say, but I have such respect. I have learned so much from my teacher that I don't want to follow this emotion. I have understood his teachings, her teachings, to such a degree that I recognize this, and I'm going to deal with it. I'm not going to let it fester. I'm not going to encourage it. But out of respect for my teacher and for what she has taught me, I'm going to deal with it and address it now so that it just doesn't continue. And this really comes out of having great respect, as we mentioned, in the qualities for the teacher and what he or she is offering us. And this is a, sometimes this is, even in some of the teachings, this is referred to as, the term is translated, and this is an awkward translation, as shame. Okay? A sense of shame, but not in the negative sense that we think of shame in the West, but shame in that this is not what my teacher has taught me, and I don't want to go that way. So we stop these disturbing emotions or we address them quicker than we normally would. We develop that mental training so that we're addressing these negative mind states as they arise. Okay.
Robbie, yeah. Can you repeat the way it was worded originally?
We will automatically put a stop to all disturbing emotions and misdeeds. So negative mind states, negative actions. And this is really done out of respect for our teacher. No, I know better than that because my teacher has taught me a better way. Okay? That's the ideal. We don't, takes a while to get there. The next one is much more straightforward. Our insights and realizations on the spiritual path will increase. Okay. That means we're just hearing the teachings and we're understanding them. We're meditating on them. We're contemplating them. We're reading about them. And they become part of our way of seeing the world. Okay. We're making progress on our path. Our insights and realizations will increase. Okay. Next one is an interesting one. We will not be deprived of spiritual guides in our future rebirths. So if you accept the idea that we have countless, that there's no beginning and no end to our rebirths, but we are reborn time and time again. And when and where and how we're reborn is based on karma we create in this lifetime and previous lifetimes. It said by having a healthy relationship with a teacher in this lifetime, we are creating the karmic causes to meet with teachers in the future, in future lifetimes. We not only get benefit in this lifetime, but we're creating the cause to meet more teachers, maybe even in this lifetime and in future lifetimes. According to Buddhism, nothing is random. And the fact that, you know, here in Raleigh, North Carolina, we've come into contact with incredible number of Buddhist teachings is not just chance or random, or not just randomness according to the Buddhist teachings. We've all created the causes for that. And if we take advantage of meeting those teachers and interact with them in a positive manner, we are planting seeds in the future will ripen in meeting up teachers again. If we don't create those seeds, you know, it's very possible to be born as a human being and be born someplace in situations so that you go in through your entire lifetime and never meet valid teachers, as they say. Okay? So that, or you could be born in a non-human form where you cannot appreciate the teachings, where you don't have the mental facilities to appreciate the teachings. So if we want to meet teachers in the future, have a healthy relationship with the teachers you have now. Okay? If you don't have a relationship with any teacher, that means you haven't created the causes yet. So reading, doing meditation practice, all of those things create the karmic seeds to encounter teachers. Next one is we will not fall to the lower realms. Okay, this means, this again is based on the concept of rebirth, meaning we will not be reborn in the lower realms, which are, by lower realms, we're referring to the animal realm, what's called the hungry ghost realm, which is a realm characterized by neediness. And then what are referred to as the hell realms, which are existences of great pain and suffering. They're considered lower realms, not because necessarily they are inferior beings. Everybody in all, each of those realms has a consciousness, just like ourselves, that has equal potential to become enlightened. Yeah, we're seeing now Linda's showing us an animal being who's living a very pampered lifestyle and getting a lot of Dharma imprints.
She's a bit spoiled and drawing my attention right now.
Most beings in the animal realm are consumed by finding enough to eat and not getting eaten themselves. It is very difficult to practice and study Dharma in the animal realm. Not impossible, but difficult. It is difficult to practice and study Dharma in the hungry ghost realm and in the hell realms because there's so much suffering. So it's difficult to create positive karma in those realms. Not impossible, but very difficult. Okay, so by having a healthy relationship with a teacher in this life, and in particularly learning how to practice ethics, which primarily in Buddhism means not harming others, we're avoiding creating the causes to be reborn in a lower realm. It's not a guarantee, but if we're practicing perfectly, it is a guarantee. But the goal is to avoid creating those causes, which is primarily hurting others. That's the main cause for rebirth in a lower realm. Okay? And The last one is we will effortlessly achieve all short and long-term aims. And that doesn't mean that we just sit there and we get everything we wish for. It means that by a healthy relationship with the teacher, again, we're creating the positive karma to achieve those things we want, which is basically happiness. We all want to be happy. We all want to help others. We haven't achieved those, but we're creating the causes to achieve those, both in the short term and the long term. Okay? So by the relationship with the teacher helps us to achieve and eventually is the cause of our, not just helps us, but is the direct path to our achieving what we all want, which is happiness. His Holiness the Dalai Lama always starts off every teaching almost by saying, we all want to be happy. That's a completely valid wish. We just don't know how to achieve it. We think we can do it by taking from others. And that's not the way to do it. We achieve it by helping others. And we become happy. And so the relationship with a teacher and a healthy relationship with a teacher helps us achieve that aim of permanent ultimate happiness. And eventually, enlightenment. Okay, the state of a Buddha, the state of completely compassionate and completely wise, which is a possibility for all of us. Okay, so those are some of the benefits phrased in very traditional Buddhist terminology, but I hope I've given you a sense of what they mean to us in our daily lives, how we can get some of these benefits from a healthy student-teacher relationship. If it's an unhealthy relationship, either because of qualities we're bringing to the table or because of qualities that the teacher is bringing to the table, we won't get those benefits. This is all based on a healthy student-teacher relationship. So it again goes back to be careful about choosing your teachers, particularly as you become more, as you progress along your path. Let's see how we're doing for time. Let me just mention briefly the disadvantages of turning our backs on our teachers, of rejecting our teachers. When we've entered into this relationship and then not just saying I'm going to pull back for a little while, but actually rejecting them in their teachings. I'm just going to read through these. I don't really have time to discuss these. We lose the ability to trust. If the relationship goes bad, we lose the ability to trust other people. We create the causes to have a negative rebirth, a rebirth in a lower realm. We become disillusioned and disheartened in our spiritual practice. Those are the main ones. I just wanted to mention those. So it's not saying that once you enter into this relationship with a teacher that you're always going to be following them or always going to their teachings. But once you've entered into it, particularly at the higher levels, you may want to say, I'm going to set this aside. Things have changed. I'm at a different place. This teacher is at a different place. But actively rejecting them can cause big problems. And again, there are lots of stories about that that I don't want to go into. So let's just take a moment and sit in meditation to finish up this evening. We have a few minutes left. check your posture. A couple deep breaths from the abdomen. Set your motivation. Now place your awareness on the breath, moving in and out through the nostrils. And now bring to mind an important teacher that you've had in your lifetime. It can be a Buddhist teacher or an elementary school teacher or a piano teacher. Anyone who made a great and strong impression on you. And think beyond just the cold facts or material of what they were teaching. How did you benefit from that relationship? How did that make you more the person you want to be? And when we think about a wonderful teacher that we've had, I think a sense of gratitude arises very spontaneously. And that's a very positive mental factor, gratitude. That's a positive imprint. Just to feel gratitude puts a very strong positive imprint. So it's really important to acknowledge our teachers, what we've learned from them, how they've benefited us. So we can develop that mental quality of gratitude to its greatest possible degree. So you can relax your concentration. So again, I'd ask you to meditate 6 days this coming week for 10 minutes. And just do that meditation. Start with motivation, then a little bit of breathing. Then reflect on what you have learned from teachers in your lifetime and cultivate a sense of gratitude towards others. And, you know, we can even, if you want to, you can move it on to benefits you've gotten from people who weren't necessarily teachers, but maybe difficult people in your life that you've actually benefited from your interaction with them. They've made you a better person in a way. They've taught you good qualities. Okay, so that we learn patience from the people who push our buttons. Okay, not the Dalai Lama, but the people who get on our nerves. And then we'll have our last session next week. And next week we'll go into the guru yoga aspect, the teacher-student relationship at the tantric levels, which is the one that people get so bent out of shape about to some degree. So maybe just talk about that in some very simple terms, even if we're not ready for that kind of relationship. And there's no need to press it if it doesn't seem like something we need. Okay? So everybody stay healthy. And we will see you next week. And let's see. Julie, what's your message?
She asked, what's the proper etiquette for cards? Oh. I guess cards to teachers.
Oh, okay. Etiquette? I don't know if there is any proper etiquette. You can always write a card. Yeah. And if it's for Geshe Gelick, you can leave it on his desk at the front of the Kadampa Center and someone will get it to him, or you can mail it to him. But it should be done with no expectations that you'll necessarily get a reply. Don't be attached to something.
Oh, no.
Yeah. But expressing, you know, saying thank you to a teacher is always appreciated.
Okay. So is it okay if we send flowers, if we have their address to their house? I wanted to, but I didn't want to, like, invade their privacy.
I don't think that'd be a problem, no. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't think you should show up on their doorstep and having them delivered. I think I see nothing wrong with that at all. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So
thank you, Robbie.
Everyone, and we will see you next week. Thank you, Luca.
Thanks, Robbie.
Thank you so much, Bye.
Thank you, Robbie.
Everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks, everyone.
See you next week.